Well, good evening. So this is the last of my nights to speak. And so for those of you who have been here, you know we've been going through this series in Hebrews 11, and we somewhat finished that up. This is kind of a, think about this as an appendix to that series, but we finished up specifically in Hebrews 11. You can go ahead and turn to 2 Timothy. That's where we're primarily going to be tonight. And to Blair's comment, I like the new songs in about 5 weeks when we actually know them, but it's going through the process that isn't necessarily so fun. As I said before, I can't read music, so it really is a new song for me. Now you see on the board, what are we talking about here? Famous last words, but we'll get to kind of the meaning of this in a minute, but let me give you a quote. This is a famous last words, and you finish it when I get to the end, okay? This is Nathan Hale, patriot, said this: "I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country." Right? So we remember this, right? So when important people die, we give great weight to the words that they left us with. I mean, presumably, if it's their last words, they thought it was important enough that that's what they're going to leave us with. What we're going to do today is we're actually going to look at the pastoral epistles, which, if you think about this in the context of famous last words, we could really think about this as the Apostle Paul's last words to us. So the last books that he wrote were 1 and 2 Timothy along with Titus, which we refer to as the pastoral epistles. These were written from prison just before his death, and he writes them to individuals, to Timothy and to Titus. So he doesn't write, I mean, think about this. This is his last words that he's going to write down in pen, and he doesn't write a big doctrinal treatise. He writes to individuals for the purpose of encouraging them, and in the case of Timothy here and in Titus, these are referred to as the pastoral epistles, to give them instruction on what the church should look like, how they should run the church, what the church, how people in the church should act. And so what we see here is, it's like his last goodbye is very more so affectionate than maybe some of the other books that were written to like broader churches, not necessarily to an individual. And let me read you, we'll start in 2 Timothy chapter 1. I just want to read one verse, and then we'll look at 2 Timothy 2 and 3 specifically. But in 2 Timothy 1 verse 14, this is kind of like the charge that he's given Timothy. It says, "That good thing that was committed unto you..." And that word committed means entrusted. It's like something, think about it, if you had something that was really important and you went to a bank and put it in a safety deposit box, that's the word that that means. So Paul said, hey, think about all the things that I have entrusted to you that you are to protect and to keep solid and to maintain their value. And it says, by the Holy Ghost, which dwells in us. And so he gives Timothy this charge, and in the process of that, he gives kind of some instruction here. And so in 1 Timothy, he really talks about how to run the church. We're not going to deal with that particular piece. In 2 Timothy, he talks about dealing with people in the church, or maybe more so as I put it here, I want you to be clear about this. This is not just written to pastors, right? So although we call these the pastoral epistles, they are important to us as lay people, as individuals. And what we're going to look at today is more so instruction for us as individuals than it is necessarily for the pastor, even though we call these pastoral epistles. And so these are instructions on how we as Christians should act in the church. And it also gives us instructions about how we are not supposed to act, specifically in the church. And so we get this really good, this is kind of the real title slide here, faithful versus unfaithful, and I've titled this a contrast study. And so what he does is he gives us these last words, and how this fits into to what we've been talking about the last few weeks is if you think about Hebrews chapter 11, we call that faith in action. And what we looked at in Hebrews chapter 11 was almost like these very specific acts of faith. And so very specific examples. Abraham, in this case, did this thing. Moses, in this situation, did this thing. And they were set aside for us, given to us as examples of what real faith looks like in action. Well, what we're going to look at here in 2 Timothy in particular is think about this as a more general look at what it means to be faithful. So if I'm going to be faithful, because, you know, a lot of times we're not going to be in the same situation. God's not going to call us to go to Egypt and lead a bunch of people out and deal with Pharaoh. We're just not going to have to do that, right? He's not going to call us like Abraham to sacrifice physically our child or to do X, Y, and Z. But nonetheless, we are called to faithful living. And so what Timothy does, or the book of 2 Timothy gives us here, are more general principles about what it looks like to be a faithful Christian. And then in contrast, the book also gives us what it looks like to be an unfaithful Christian. And so we've kind of gone from very specific examples, and now we're taking a step back and saying, okay, how should I act if I am truly going to be a faithful Christian? And so let me go ahead, and we're going to start in 2 Timothy chapter 2. And so you can kind of think about the message as broken into two parts. The first part is what Christians should look like. That's in 2 Timothy chapter 2. And then the second half, which will go even a little bit quicker, is 2 Timothy chapter 3, what Christians should not look like. And so you can think about this as chapter 2 is what it means to be faithful, and chapter 3 is what it looks like to be unfaithful. And so these, again, are just general principles for living. Okay, so let me go ahead and read 2 Timothy chapter 2. We'll look at verses 1 through 7 here. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. So before he even tells us how we're supposed to act, he gives us the mechanism by which our faithfulness is supposed to be poured out of us. And it's through God's grace. So you can really think about the grace of God as the divine enabling for us to be faithful, because we cannot do it on our own. We need the grace and the support and the strength of God in order to actually live out a faithful life. Then he goes to verse 2. And the things that you have heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men. And there's this link. So here's what it means. This is what we should tell people who want to be faithful, that they should, and then they should be able to teach others also. Okay, so then we look at verses 3 through 6, which is really kind of the focus here. Therefore, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. And if a man also strives for masteries, which is talking about more of an athletic kind of event, yet he is not crowned except he strive lawfully. The husbandman or the farmer that labors must be first partaker of the fruits. Consider what I say, and the Lord give you understanding in all things. So what Paul does here, and he also does this I think it's 2 Corinthians as well. Even Brian talked about this morning. He gives us three examples or three analogies about what faith looks like. And so he gives us the analogy of a soldier, the analogy of an athlete, and the analogy of a farmer. And so we're just going to look at these and see, well, what does a soldier look like? What are the characteristics that a soldier would have, and how does that relate to what it would look like if we're living by faith? What are the characteristics of an athlete, and how does that apply to the Christian walk? And so that's kind of what we're going to look at. So he says, we should be like soldiers. Now, if I was living in the Roman or Greek time period when this book is written, most cities, you would walk around, and you would see soldiers present, right? It's not like I go to downtown Westfield or downtown Carmel, and we see stationed soldiers walking around. But nonetheless, we still understand, many of us have children or family or have been in the military, so we understand what this would mean nonetheless. And so here are some characteristics of what it would look like to be a good, faithful soldier. And the analogy is, this is what it would look like. These are the characteristics of a faithful Christian. So number one, a soldier has concentrated service. And the phrase that's used here in 2 Timothy chapter 2, it says, you're not entangled by the ordinary affairs of this life. And so as a soldier, you would have a focus that supersedes daily activities, right? Your focus isn't on just the day-to-day mundane things. You have a higher purpose in mind. The second attribute here, soldiers are loyal. They are willing to die for what they have committed to. Right? We see that. We see that just every week, it seems like. We see accounts of soldiers who have given their life for the sacrifice and the protection of our country. We should be willing to die for our faith, what we have committed to. Good soldiers, good faithful Christians are obedient. They trust their commanders. And what I want you to also think about is, okay, did we see these attributes at work in Hebrews chapter 11 with the Hall of Faith? Right? So Moses, for example, He was this great commander. He knew the area of Egypt, yet he followed God's command right to the bank of the Red Sea. And in his human understanding, he'd be like, why would we come here? There's no place for us to go. But he followed his commander because his commander had a broader, you know, in his case, perfect knowledge, perfect power, and knew exactly what he was doing. Willing to die, right? We saw that with many of our examples in the Hall of Faith. Willing to sacrifice, right? Obviously, we talked about willing to give our life. This would be things like willing to sacrifice our wealth, our family, our comfort. Think about Abraham, right? That's exactly what he did. God called him out of his homeland into a land that he was going to sojourn, that he was going to be by himself. And so we see all of these things as attributes that the patriarchs in the Hall of Faith exhibited. But these are kind of, again, as I said, looking at it in a more general sense. Okay, number two, he gives us the analogy of an athlete. So he says here, they should compete or strive lawfully. How I would describe this is this participation is, this is how I would say it, our faith should be active, not passive, right? It should have a purpose to it, a goal, a finish line in mind. It should be, and this is really what Brian hit on this morning in the ABF time, is that athletes are dedicated to training, that there's a full-time dedication. I've mentioned this, I think, before. Our son Lannon has done an Ironman. He's training for his next one. He's competing in September in Maryland. And I found out, okay, this is a side note, but I think it's kind of crazy. So he's in for the swim portion, which is 2.4 miles. They're swimming a river in Maryland, and there are small jellyfish in the river that sting you along the way. I was like, okay, I'm not doing that one. Well, I'm not doing any of them, I've looked at his training schedule. He's up at 4:30 in the morning. Today, I think he rode, it was a light ride. I think he did 60 miles on his bike. Or no, he ran this morning. So he had a 14-mile run this morning, went to church, had a 60-mile ride this afternoon. That's a light day, okay? When you train for something, it's a full-time dedication. And so what I was thinking about here is a part-time Christian is an oxymoron. If we are to be faithful, it is a full-time endeavor, right? So when we think about if we were to describe people who are faithful in service to the ministry, would we describe them as someone who we know they're going to be in church? We know they're going to be here at an event for service? Or would we describe them as someone who, yeah, I don't know if that person will show up, right? That's the difference. It's, am I a part-time kind of doing things just half-heartedly, or I'm really giving this a full-time participation? And you know, we've talked about this also before, that every Christian, how we would kind of take this to the next step, every Christian is in full-time ministry. We might not be getting paid for it from the church, but every Christian is in full-time ministry. Hit the wrong button. And then athletes are disciplined. They are able to deny themselves. And this is, right, the training is not fun. If it is, you got something wrong with you. I mean, the training is not fun, but the outcome is what's fun. And the outcome of a Christian, I mean, we have the ultimate outcome to look forward to. And so we should really just put in the effort that we should. I mean, we shouldn't let, Pastor talked about this with the Colts this morning, right? And the fans and just all the energy that's put into it. We should not let them outdo us, right? We should be faithful and attentive to our dedication here. Paul then gives us this analogy that Christians should be like farmers, right? Our faith should be like farmers. And what does he mean by this? That farmers are content to work and then wait. And this is, this next one here is that there is no expectation for quick results. Blair, how long did you have to wait from the time you planted your first tree till you're going to harvest your first tree?
8 years.
8 years. That's a long time, right? And that, I mean, you know, we think about corn farmer, at least it's like 6 months, right? 8 years. You have to have a vision for what this forward-looking faith looks like. And if you think about the hall of faith that we talked about, that's what Abraham had, that's what Isaac had, that's what Jacob had, that's what Joseph had, right? And so we see that they all looked ahead to what was going to happen. Moses had this forward-looking faith when he followed God's command and instituted the Passover. And he has said, we're going to celebrate this for years to come. And so he had this faith that it was going to happen, and not only going to happen today, that it was going to continue to happen. And that's the perspective that we should have. And we have to understand that, Pastor mentioned this also this morning, so I thought it was, you know, everything this morning kind of fit into what we're talking about today. When I was out of, did my MBA, and I took a job at GE down in Cincinnati, with General Electric. It was back when it was actually a good company. It's kind of disbanded since I left. It is disbanded, right? It's sold off a bunch of things. But I started with a group of probably there was about 10 of us, and we were in this management program on the finance side. And so there were 10 of us that on a day-to-day basis, we were like a cohort. It's like we were in class together. And so we got to be pretty tight. Some of them even lived in my same apartment complex. One guy played the bagpipes. He was, you know, and it was just like this very eclectic type of group. And as you might suspect, we have different sets of opinions on our faith, right? But you're living in a world where if I'm faithful, I'm not a part-time Christian. I'm not doing my job over here, and I'm one person, and then going to church on Sunday, and I'm another person, right? There shouldn't be a difference. I mean, we just live it out in a different place. So, I mean, I would go to lunch with them. We'd have, you know, meetings together, all this stuff. We were friends, but they knew where I stood. I didn't go drink with them. All the things you would think about. And obviously, I left that company, and I didn't really... I mean, I tried to stay in touch a little bit, but, you know, as things happen, you move away and people go to different companies. Well, I'm sitting in my house, like, it's probably 10 or 15 years later, and LinkedIn, right, is helpful, and he connects with me, and he asks if he can give me a call. I was like, yeah, sure. Just thought he wanted to catch up. So he goes on to tell me that within the last year, he has gotten saved, his wife got saved. They were on the brink of divorce. They have reconciled. And he just wanted to reach out and tell me because of what he saw when we were together. And that was an influence on him. We don't know what's going to happen or what a single action or what a life lived in faith, how it's going to play out in the fruit that develops. I didn't get to lead him to Christ. I didn't get to lead his wife to Christ. But I'd like to think that I had an impact on planting the seed or watering the seed. And so this is the analogy of the sower. And if I'm faithful, right, it doesn't matter what the step is, when and the farmer is ready to work at any hour. When it's time to plant, you plant. When it's time to water, you water. When it's time to harvest, you harvest. Because if you don't do it when it's time, what happens? It dies, right? So we just have to be ready and available and faithful to live this out on a day-to-day basis as these situations arise. So that's 2 Timothy chapter 2. That's what it means to be faithful, and he gives us these analogies. Go ahead and turn to 2 Timothy chapter 3. And this is, before we do that here, I forgot I put a summary in here. This is how I would summarize this description of faithfulness through these analogies. Is that we, to be a faithful Christian, we have to be committed to something bigger than ourselves. It's not just us. It's all about God. And we have to have this commitment in mind. And then number two, we have to be willing to sacrifice and endure challenges to accomplish the bigger goal, right? There's way more than just amassing a good retirement account, although that's important, okay? There's way more than just having a nice house. There's way more than whatever you want to list, right? We have to have this long-term sacrificial perspective in mind. Okay, 2 Timothy chapter 3, what Christians should not look like. Okay, so I'm going to start in verse 2. notice this, these descriptions. For men shall be lovers of their own selves. And this is talking about the last times, but it really is we can think about these as, I started with these as what the world looks like, but I want to be very clear because as we get to a later verse here that we'll look at, Paul actually makes this is like what it could look like inside the church. So it's not just like, okay, here's the church, this bastion of God's glory, and these things never happen, right? Paul's giving us a list of what it means to be unfaithful, and that obviously happens in the world, but it can also happen in the church if we're not careful. So we see this in verse 2, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. So we're just going to go through these very quickly, and we could take a day on each of these, so we're just going to hit the high end here. So let's go through the list. He says, Christians should not be self-centered. Christianity is all about the obliteration of self. It is like the antithesis to what the world wants. The world is self-centered, and it's all about what individuals can get for themselves. Christianity is the exact opposite of that. We should not be lovers of money. We should not be braggarts or arrogant. And so the difference here is a braggart is a pretender. Think about this as the external type of pride. Arrogant is an internal contempt for others. It's this thought that we think we're better than others. Does that work its way into the church? Right? Those things we see even in, our church is better than this church. And we should have a respect for our church, and that's why we've chosen here, because we think it's the best place to be. But there are a lot of other good churches out there. We should not be lovers of insult. We should not be disobedient to parents. And I want to take a more general, obviously this would be true in a very specific sense, but the more general sense here is people who are unfaithful lack respect for those around them. We should not be thankless. This is, in our society today, this is what we've termed the entitlement mentality. But in a more specific sense, I'd kind of think back to the Lord's Prayer, the model prayer, where he talks about forgive us our debts as we forgive others, right? This idea of being thankless is failing to recognize the debt that we owe to God, the debt that we simply cannot pay. We should not be unholy. This is a lack of basic ethics. Needed lots of slides here. It's a big list. We should not be without affection. This is someone who only loves themselves or has a very small group of people they love. It's me, myself, and I. Should not be truce breakers. And I put this in a more general sense. This, thinking about the ABF that Blair's doing, this is someone who is not neighborly. So we are called in faithfulness to be neighborly to those around us, to draw people to Christ as opposed to putting up barriers. We should not be false accusers. Now again, we typically think about this as lying about something that someone has done, but in a more general sense, this is simply saying we should not be speaking evil of other people. We should not be incontinent or ungovernable. This would be, maybe in our terminology, we are a slave to our own desires, that we cannot control what we want or what we do, that we lack discipline. Now, you're starting to see, are these attributes exact opposites of what we just talked about with faithfulness? Think about the athlete. They are disciplined. They have self-control. If I am incontinent or ungovernable, I don't have that, right? So again, Paul is just putting these things up as contrasts and say, hey, if you want to be faithful, you need to be on this side in this list of attributes, not over here. We should not be savage, which means a lack of sympathy or sensitivity. People who are unfaithful do not love good things. I would say it this way, they are ashamed by goodness. If you think about our world today, people that are doing wrong don't like Christians because they shine a light on sin. They are treacherous, or they blaspheme goodness. So that's, again, not only do they not want goodness around, they simply are blasphemers of goodness. They are heady or reckless. This is to be impulsive, or you are controlled by your impulses. Think about this as fleshly. They are conceited, which they think their self better than others. And this last phrase that we see here that kind of summarizes it all, and you think about the very first term that we had was self-centered, and the very last thing we have is lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. And so we have this whole list essentially bracketed in a desire for self. So faithful is, so here's the summary here, right? If I'm going to be faithful, so I have these examples here. People who are faithful are those who put God and others above self, those who have a long-term perspective. And again, if you go back to all those very specific examples that we looked at in the Hall of Faith, this would be appropriate for how we saw those specific acts of faith. People who are unfaithful, if we had to take this whole list and maybe summarize it into these two specific points, unfaithful people are selfish and temporal. Now, again, we typically look at this and say, okay, here's the church in 2 Timothy chapter 2, and here's the world in 2 Timothy chapter 3, and I don't have to worry about that because I'm already a Christian. But look at verse 6 in 2 Timothy chapter 3. It says, for of this sort, talking about all these attributes, all these people who are exhibiting these attributes of unfaithfulness, are they which creep into houses. Now, I think this is a more general sense, but where did churches meet in this day? In houses, right? And so I think this is a very an implicit statement here that if we are not careful, these attributes can weave their way into individuals and can weave their way into the church. And we need to be faithful and make sure that we are separating these things and that we are living a faithful life. And I came across this quote that I want to end with here. And this is really dealing with, Pastor alluded to this morning as well, that, the quote, we're the only Bible that some people are ever going to read, right? And it's what our actions are. I'm a Christian. Okay, people look at me and says, you said you're a Christian. How you act then describes what Christianity is like. And so I came across this quote. It goes like this. It may well be that the greatest handicap to Christianity is not the most notorious sinner, but the sleek devotee of a faultless orthodoxy and a dignified convention. So basically it's saying, hey, someone who looks the part of a Christian, who is horrified when it's suggested that real religion is a dynamic power that changes an individual's personal life. So if you think back to our list of the Hall of Faith, did the faith of these people change the way they acted? Did it change their behaviors? Did it change their attitudes? Did it strengthen their walk? Did it give them a way to deal with uncertainty? Did it give them a way to deal with trials and struggles? It did. Because if they don't have faith, then it doesn't work. And so the challenge for us is, if we want to get to the point where when we're faced with an individual situation like Abraham or Rahab or Moses or Noah or Enoch, whatever the situation is, and it's going to be different for me than it is for Jack, than it is for Drew, than it is for whoever, right? All of us face these different situations, and what we want to happen is, when we come out of that situation, that God looks at us and says, he or she acted with faith. And it's this perspective that we have to have before we get to those situations to allow us to actually live out the action in the situation itself. And so the challenge here is, again, not an individual example, but a more general principle that says, if we want to act in faith, we really have to have a selfless, long-term perspective and be willing to work today for something that we may not see the reward for years to come. So that is, I guess, the last thing I would say here is, if I had to summarize all of this, if I had to give a definition of faithfulness, this would be it. It is a love for Christ that results in action. That is faithfulness. And so we've talked about faith isn't just a heart belief. It's not just a mind belief. It is an action that lives forth in the day-to-day activities of life.